Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Mr. Mayor, fellow members of the City Council, in less than 2 hours, liquor will be declared illegal by decree of the distinguished gentlemen of our nation's Congress. To those beautiful, ignorant bastards.
It's not that this is a jobless recovery. We've seen 8 months in a row of private sector job growth. We're actually seeing more job growth so far.
Thank you very much. Now, I don't know how this got mixed together other than I picked it, but at first you heard the voice of an actor who sounds like he's taken too much laughing gas and his vocal cords are permanently ruined, Steve Buscemi, who I have no idea what power he has over HBO or Martin Scorsese that they would miscast this B actor, this character actor, who's an excellent character, in Boardwalk Empire. I watched it again to see if perhaps my original views were somehow, distorted out of jealousy or bias. But I have to tell you, I watched it a second time. It was worse than the first. And the reason I'm going to talk about Boardwalk Empire and HBO is because the next soundbite that we played was that of the president, who again sounds like he's a character miscast for the role of president. Just as HBO miscasts Steve Buscemi to be some prohibition-era gangster, and he doesn't fit the part, his voice is wrong, his face looks like he has a medical condition, he's almost a freak. Then we have a guy who's playing it being president, who has never been, shouldn't have been chosen to play the lead as president in the first place. And the first rule of drama is go for people who fit the part. Obama doesn't fit the part of the presidency any more than Buscemi fits the part for this Boardwalk Empire. Now, I'm going to talk about the death penalty as well because it has nothing to do with what I just said. Here in Marin County, California, which is ground zero for Barbara Boxerland, a judge just refused to halt the scheduled execution at midnight tomorrow night of a man named Brown who raped and murdered a 15-year-old girl in 1980. Do the math. 30 years this piece of trash has been kept alive by vermin in the ACLU and other such nematodes. And a judge just said, we're going to go ahead and we're going to execute him anyway, because the judge said she's not going to speculate about the possibility of a botched and painful lethal injection. I'm going to ask you at the end of this little monologue whether you are still in favor of the death penalty or not. I am more in favor of the death penalty than ever before. And number two, in my day, if a person was put on death row, you know how many appeals they had? One. And you know how long the average appeal took after they were convicted? A very short period of time. In other words, they were given a speedy trial and speedy justice, as the Constitution calls for. But just as so much of the law has been perverted by the liberals from NYU, Columbia, and the other fallen institutes of lower living, so has the death penalty, and so has immediate justice. I believe that we should clean out death rows across the land and kill them all within 30 days, and then bring the next band in. Put the next band in on the death row, give them one appeal each, and execute them in 30 days, fry them all. And that will send a message to the next band of people who want to break into a home in Connecticut and tie up little girls and rape them and then set the house on fire. I think. My opinion. So here are some of the reviews of Boardwalk Empire. Now, the reason these reviews come from readers who watched the show rather than from the people in the industry is quite clear. The reason reviewers are glowing about it is because they want to go to the A-list parties. They want to rub shoulders with Martin Scorsese and the actors. And they don't want to criticize anything that HBO does or any of these directors or actors are in because they're afraid they won't get invited back. But the people themselves are not stupid. It's almost the same as the political structure. Rarely do you see, in other words, journalists criticizing Democrats in any meaningful way. Rarely, right? Because they want to continue to be invited and be given access. You know that. So, but the people themselves have said enough is enough. So listen to what some people have written about this crappy series on HBO. Quote, I gave this masterpiece a second shot, despite the colossal failure of Buscemi as Thompson in episode one. I fully expected him to fail again, and he didn't disappoint. His voice, his mannerisms, and his entire presence carry all the gravitas of Stan Laurel, which is true. Someone else said the costumes and the interior sets are the only things worth noting, unless you're into gratuitous TNA and It is sad that so many TV writers are unwilling to criticize second-rate work by previously critically acclaimed people. Pitt, that's an actor, is simply a horrible actor in this series. Not only does his limp vary greatly from scene to scene, he delivers his lines poorly and forgets he is supposed to be a former Princeton student, not a gum-chewing semi-literate. I can go on. Ladies and gentlemen, this HBO miniseries was supposed to replace The Sopranos. It is a total disaster, as is the political structure. And we're talking about the death penalty. And it is the Savage Nation. And now play Blue Monday, and I'll take a call. Blue Monday from my good friend, Fats Domino, and we'll talk about the way Monday to execute them rapidly.
Blue Monday. Got to work like a slave all day. Here come Tuesday. Oh, Tuesday.
All right, let's go to New York. WOR. Ira, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Okay, well, first of all, I kind of disagree with you totally with the HBO show. First of all, you take world leaders. Take George Bush, for example. Nobody would...
Hold it. I didn't hear you. Take what?
Well, as far as acting is concerned, look at people who are even in the public eye. Look at Mayor Bloomberg. Does he look like he's a mayor of New York? When you look at him, he's a billionaire.
That's right. He acts like he proves the adage that you can be an idiot and be a billionaire. So what's your point?
Well, the point is, Buscemi is who he is. I mean, he is a great actor, I believe. Whether you like.
Well, why would you book a man with a voice like Donald Duck? Sounds like he's on Laughing Gas when he has there's no compelling reason to look at him. He's ugly.
Well, not everybody's a Cary Grant, I'm sure.
Okay. Let's put it another way, since apparently you are sold on this character. Did you ever watch The Sopranos?
In American History.
Did you watch The Sopranos?
Yes, and I'm glad you brought that up, because the first 2 years were very good. After that, it was totally...
Again, what do you think you're talking to your brother-in-law, the Furrier, from 34th Street? Why don't you try one point at a time? So you did watch The Sopranos, and the actor who played the lead, what is his name?
Mr. Gandolfini.
All right. Now, Gandolfini is not a good-looking man, but he has tremendous power and tremendous screen presence. And when he walks on the set, when he says a word, you feel him, don't you?
100%. He was casted terrific.
All right, he was cast perfectly. We agree on that. But also, you could see he's a powerful man, and he could potentially be a gang leader because of his power, correct?
100%, I agree.
All right, so here's where we're going to disagree. There's a scene set up in Boardwalk Empire where some plumber or something is gambling in a casino, and the Buscemi character walks in, this little wimpy Buscemi with a Donald Duck voice, and he supposedly takes this plumber and smashes his head against the pool table repeatedly and knocks him out. Do you believe that? Do you believe a little wimpy guy like that could do that to a plumber?
That's a very good point, and I'm glad you brought that up. When I saw that, I didn't think that was believable.
So in other words, what I'm saying to you is, you like Steve Buscemi when he plays the weirdo characters that he's always played. And we all liked him as a grade B a character actor. But why in the world would a man with the directorial wisdom of Scorsese have chosen him when there were so many other powerful lead characters? There's only one reason for it. And that's because he's out of touch with reality the same way the politicians are. And or they wanted to get someone cheap. They didn't want to spend the money on top-rated talent, which is what's going on in the media today. Everybody wants ratings, and they don't want to pay for talent.
That's a good point. I You can't.
All right, thank you. Now I don't. I'm not mad at you anymore. As my father used to have a sign in his antique store: "Don't go away, Mayor. Just go away." I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. I said, why am I talking about an HBO show? Because to me, it's part and parcel of the disconnect between the princes of entertainment and the princes of politics. They think that you are so stupid that you'll buy anything that they throw at you, whether it be a guy who should never have been cast as a lead in the case of this HBO miniseries, or a guy who should never have been cast as a president in the case of the United States of America. The American people have said niet. They've said no. They've said no, no, no to Obama at every turn. They finally caught on to the fact that they were deceived. And they want him out of office. And they want to throw Pelosi out as well. And they want to throw the entire Democrat crowd out. They're not in love with the Republicans. They know what they are. Believe me. But compared to the two, I mean, you know, they'll take the lesser of two evils, which is the only choice they have now. But, you know, beneath that surface, there's the Tea Party candidate phenomenon, and that shows there is something going on. Now, I want to talk about the death penalty a little bit, because they're going to burn one of them tomorrow night at midnight. And you should see the convoluted logic that one of these devious liberal lawyers is using about, you know, cruel and unusual punishment and this and that. And they built a new gas chamber, a new execution chamber. And it's still not good enough for the lawyer. You know, they make a living on these cases. Many of these lawyers have lived off a single death penalty case their entire life. You understand that. Incidentally, I, Michael Savage, we applied for me to be an observer. A proper last meal, or that he was writhing in pain, or that he lost his dignity. They don't let any conservatives into the observation booth. I would like to go there. I'd like to have a last meal and watch him. I would order a sausage pizza and watch him writhe in pain. And I'm not sadistic. I got to tell you something. I'm a peace-loving man. I'm a compassionate man. I let flies out of the window. I wouldn't harm a fly, but when I see a man who raped and killed a 15-year-old girl being kept alive for 30 years, I would gladly eat a sausage pizza in the observation room, by the way. That's why I'm talking about all of this stuff today. 1-800-449-8205 or Michael S. Savage at a doctor. Gino in Chicago, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Mike, as a screenwriter and fan of Martin Scorsese, I really wanted to like this show. But
right.
This thing is absolutely horrible, and it all comes down to casting. When I saw that Al Capone, it was just ridiculous. I thought I was watching somebody from the Apple Dumpling Gang. It was
no, who is that guy they cast as Al Capone? It is another one laughable. You know, he's standing next to him like a shrimpy guy. I know Capone was a short guy. I guess they're playing on the short because you know short has nothing to do with tough. We know that. But he doesn't project power and energy, does he?
He doesn't project power and energy at all, and neither does Luciano. I mean, these were powerful figures in the underworld.
Exactly. Again, the guy looked like a tap dancer. The guy who played Lucky Luciano looked like a tap dancer. They pulled off a chorus line.
And I'll tell you another thing. Anyone who compares this to The Sopranos is insane. I mean,
Gino, hold on now. Okay, I'm not an expert in this, but I am, in a way, an expert a viewer. I watch a lot of movies. I'm a little older. I've watched too many in my life. I can tell good from the bad. How could Scorsese have made such a mishap here? The only answer I have for myself is he took the money and ran. He lent his name to this for a quick buck. Would you agree with that?
Well, I mean, it's hard to tell because I think aesthetically speaking, the show is very well shot. He only had what he could work with. I mean, as far as screenwriting goes, I mean, I would love to volunteer my services. I have 12 feature screenplays, Dr. Savage, and I would definitely volunteer my services any day.
Well, what is your biggest feature?
I'm an independent filmmaker, but I mean, I have every genre you can imagine. I have The Miracle Murders, Primitive Street, The Karaoke Artist, Old Fellas, Amarok, Snap, A Second Chance, Diamonds on a Lake. I mean,
wow, you ought to write my life story. You ought to help me collaborate for my movie.
What's funny about it is I actually wrote the first scene when you put a call out. I think it was a year ago to write the first scene, and I kind of envisioned it something like...
Here's the thing. I don't want to get ahead of myself. Next week, my book launches, and I have a very busy month, you know, after that, pushing trickle-up poverty to where it should go, which is that it's going to be number one. I just want to keep it there because I want to change the course of the election. But, Gino, God willing, in 2011, given some things happening the way I want it to happen, I will do the feature film on the Michael Savage story because the audience is there for it. And it doesn't matter to me what the critics say about it. I am going to do it. So let's stay in touch with that. Let's deal with it in 2011. Okay, thanks for the call. 1-800-449, blah, blah, blah. So what do you want to talk about? Oh, Mad Men. You want to talk about Mad Men? It's getting good again. Mad Men got good again. They brought January Jones back in. She's a little pasty, though, this season. I don't know what happened. I don't know whether she's supposed to look pasty because she married an older guy, and I don't know. She has a she had a more austere, untouchable look the last couple of years. She almost looks used. Now, I don't know whether it's a product of her actual personal life, which maybe she's dating a guy who abuses her. I don't know. I'm purely speculating. She doesn't have that untouchable austerity anymore. Now, all of a sudden, she looks like a contaminated cheerleader. New York, WOR Frank, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, pleasure to speak to you. I want to talk about Mad Men versus the Boardwalk Empire and the quality of writing. I watched
yes.
the first episode of Boardwalk Empire, and every time Steve Buscemi had a little argument with somebody, every time he walked away, he had to make some dramatic little quip. And it just rubbed me the wrong way. To me, it was a testimony to how poor the writing really was. Now,
yeah, it's a testimony to mediocrity. Everything in it could be predicted before it happens.
Right, right. But compare that to the in-depth character study on Mad Men.
Absolutely. That's right. In Mad Men, suddenly he's falling apart. John Hamm, who is a superb actor, by the way. He's not just a good-looking guy. He's a superb actor, correct?
Yes, he is. And the quality of writing can really be seen in the subtleties of the character.
Right. Well, Matthew Weiner is quite something. Believe me. We're related. 15 generations. Welcome back to the one and only Savage Nation. Today, a Marin County judge, that's ground zero for liberalism, refused to halt the execution early tomorrow night of convicted murderer Alan Greenwood. The murderer is not even challenging his death sentence for the rape and murder of a 15-year-old Riverside girl in 1980. He's not challenging that, but his verminous lawyers argue that California's procedures for putting prisoners to death with a sequence of three drugs suffer from the same flaws that prompted U.S. District Dolt Judge Jeremy Fogel to halt executions in the state in 06. In 06, dumb Fogel ruled that the state failed to train or supervise prison staff properly, and that they lacked clear rules for preparing and administering the drugs, and they conducted executions in a dimly lit chamber that prevented effective monitoring. So the state officials revised the regulations and built a new death chamber. And so now Fogel, the judge, plans to examine the new procedures, but old Fogel has declined to block Brown's execution scheduled for 12:01 a.m. Wednesday at San Quentin State Prison. The judge even went further and he said that Brown could avoid the risk of excruciating pain by choosing to be put to death with a heavy dose of the sedative sodium pentothal, the first of the three drugs. But listen, but the murderer's lawyers said that the poor murderer lacked the information necessary to make a choice by the judge's Sunday deadline. And so the murderer has now appealed the judge's decision to the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Schlemiel's in San Francisco. Brown is one of six death row inmates in California who have run out of appeals and are in line for execution, said Christine Basparek, spokeswoman for Attorney General Jerry Moonbeam Brown. The execution, if it occurs, will be the last in California this year. And that's because prison officials will run out of sodium pentothal on September 30th. That I don't understand. How hard can it be to make sodium pentothal? And on and on and on. Cruel and unusual punishment, blah, blah, blah. And on and on and on. And so the attorney for the murderer is Sarah Eisenberg. Sarah Eisenberg, the product of millions of years of evolution to produce a lawyer like this, who has sympathy for a murderer and no sympathy for the victim. And so I'll tell you, the whole society is upside down. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Boardwalk Empire. Boardwalk Empire? That's my next show. Boardwalk. B-O-R-E-D. Boardwalk Empire. Oh, God, that's it. It's over. Boardwalk Empire. B-O-R-E-D. Walk Empire. That's the end of the show. Ho, ho, ho. He must have needed money. You know, I'm always amazed to find out how little money people actually make. I mean, when you hear a top guy like Scorsese, whatever, you actually look at the amount they make. It's not that much money compared to others. It's astounding when you look at it. And they always live in measly $3 million houses in Hollywood. You say, oh, it's a measly $3 million house. Because I'm spoiled. I live in California. Everything is $3 million. This is the simplest house is still $3 million in California, other than welfare housing. But it's amazing to me that they take jobs. I don't know what they make for. They don't make a lot of money. I think he was making a buck or two a movie. That's a million or two a movie. That's not a lot of money when you think about it for a man with that kind of reputation. Because I don't know if the movies earn that much anymore. I don't know where the money goes. So maybe they bought the actors for cheap. They couldn't get top-tier talent, so they picked character actors and miscast them. Or maybe they just screwed HBO. I don't know. It's the same as the political structure. Or would you rather talk about the death pen? Death pen or board of the Walk Empire? Albany, New York, Mike, welcome to the program.
It's an honor to talk with you, Dr. Savage. As a God-fearing liberal, I really think this guy needs the death penalty and should be executed. My problem with the death penalty, though, or my concern with it, is that we have to be sure that people are actually guilty. And, for example, the Innocence Project, that's where I struggle with the death penalty. How can we...
Well, hold it. You know, you're a reasonable man. I'm not didactic where I'm going to say that I disagree with you 100%. However, look, this man himself is not even challenging his death sentence for the rape and murder of a 15-year-old girl. Instead, they're using a legalistic trick, saying that it's cruel and unusual punishment. So in this case, would you support the death penalty for this rapist and murderer?
I would.
So you're not that bad a liberal. You're the kind I could break matzah with.
Well, absolutely, Michael. And, you know, I just think that you just absolutely either have to have confession or absolutely be sure, because you know that people have been out of prison who were on death row. Because they
yes.
And it would
well, I'm not so sure of those cases either. I've seen a lot of them that leave me questioning whether they were really innocent or it was more trickery by the lawyers for NYU. But that's too moot a point. What your main argument is, and I've heard it since I'm a child from the communists in New York, is I'd rather see 99 guilty people go free than one innocent man be executed. Is that the one you're talking about?
Well, not quite that way. I think that there's always going
to
be...
I used to hear that from the ILWU types, the New York Communist Front. I'd like to see 99 guilty men go free, then one innocent man should go to a guest chamber. I've heard that over and over again. Ask him if he feels that way, if it's his daughter who got raped and murdered by the one man he let go free.
And there's always going to be, with men in government, running government, there's always going to be mistakes. But I think that... I think that 99% is a pretty good number, okay?
Okay, well, let me ask you, you know, the ACLU came up with the Innocence Project, which is a misnomer. I'd like to fund something called the Guilty Project, which is all the people on death row and fry them as fast as possible and stop this nonsense that it's cruel and inhuman punishment. Give them another appeal, go through all the facts, don't use legal trickery, and kill them, and that's the end of it. And there's only one reason for it. It's not because I'm a vengeful man. It's because there's too much mayhem in this society, because they know they're going to live 30 good years on death row. They're going to have lawyers throwing themselves at them. They're going to have documentarians coming and asking them how they feel. They're going to get special meals, law library. Do you know that at San Quentin they even have a video room where they teach these murderers how to make movies? Did you know that?
Yes, I did, Michael. It's terrible.
It really gets me upset to believe how well prisoners are treated in this country. Again, because the lawyers are bent over backwards for them. It's another one of the reasons we're going bankrupt. How can you give prisoners such great care? It's insane.
People have to remember the victims, Michael, and they don't. That's part of the problem.
All right. So I see you really started out with one side, but you're really on the other. All right. Thanks, Mike. I got a headache already. I got too excited. I got to teach myself not to blow up. I get too worked up. I really do. I've tried after all these years in radio, 16 years. I'm trying to flap less and coast more, as I said last week. You know what I mean? Hit the target without expanding the veins in my head and the neck. But it happens anyway. I get worked up over this because when I see a lawyer arguing with a judge who says, all right, you're afraid of cruel and inhuman punishment, I'll tell you what. You could avoid it you could avoid the risk of excruciating pain by choosing to put to death with a heavy dose of sodium pentothal. So the lawyer says, listen to this. He lacks the information needed to make a choice by the judge's Sunday deadline. In other words, he has too much to do. The prisoner on death row, he can't really figure it out whether he should take sodium pentothal or not. He has to consult, I guess, with a few experts that they'll bring in from Berkeley. Once the Berkeley lawyers get off the dope from the weekend, they can come in and clear their head. So last they ran out of sodium pentothal. I never saw such. I mean, the lawyers in this country today, by and large, there are some great lawyers. My lawyers are the best. Your lawyers are horrible. They're terrible people. I've never seen anything like it. Miami, Florida, Mike, you're on the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, how you doing?
Good.
I think that when you're talking about this HBO show, I think you're kind of missing the point on the cast. I think that the characters here were cast from Capone to Luciano to the main actor. Satirical. I think it's supposed to be a satire of the arrogance and the ridiculousness of these characters over the years. What do you think?
Then why watch it? To me, compelling television has to have high drama. It has to be high art. I don't see this in this HBO thing. It looks like laughing gas, the whole thing to me.
It is. It's garbage, but I think it's...
At least we agree on the garbage part of it. Well, talking about television, do you watch any television that you like?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so do I. So what do you like the most?
I tend to like Telemundo.
Okay. What do you like, the heavy-set girls in skimpy tops?
That's exactly what it is, Dr.
I knew you were going to say that because you're in Miami. Have you ever noticed, by the way, this is an interesting side note since we're talking about entertainment, the ethnic differences in what is considered female attractiveness. How in America, the post-operative transvestite look is still considered the norm for beautiful women, while in the ethnic communities, a sort of heavy-set woman with a body is considered a beautiful woman. Have you noticed the difference?
Definitely have.
Yeah, where did this post-op transvestite look become fashionable in America? When did that happen?
When the metrosexual took over the government.
Yeah, we can write a whole series of poems about it. All right, well, we're observing. Remember, I coined the phrase Michael Savage, news, views, and reviews. I do the news, I give you my views, and sometimes I give you reviews. And I want to be positive now, because sometimes I lay awake at night and I say, you know, I can be very negative, but that's not enough. How about being positive on something? So, I'll tell you what. I'm going to tell you about a movie I saw by accident last Tuesday night that was so good I ordered a DVD. And I didn't even know who had directed it until after I watched it, thank God, because if I had known that they were the directors, I probably wouldn't have watched it. You know what I'm saying? It was strange. It appeared on like a Showtime scanner. You know, you look at what's going on. I already forgot the name of it. A Special Man. Do you remember the name of it, Beowulf? You just ordered a movie for me. Search your notes. I forgot already the name. Joel and Ethan Coen did the movie in 2009. So they did No Country for Old Men, which, you know, is a mixed bag. You know, either you like their shtick or not. But this one, what's it called? An Ordinary Man or something? A Special Man? I don't know what it's called. It's set, what's it called? A Serious Man. Okay. So I see the lineup for it. I'm scanning for a movie, and it says a college professor, a physicist, has a series of problems and this and that, and his wife's going to leave him. She's having an affair with his best friend, and his neighbor sunbathes nude. You know, nude, blah, blah, blah. So I mean, all right, watch it. Seemed like an oddball thing, and it caught me off guard because the character who plays the physics professor at a small Midwestern college was deadpan. He was phenomenal. I forget his name. And it's set in Milwaukee, Minneapolis, I think 1960s, in a tract house. So this physics professor lives with his wife and two children. The daughter is stealing money from him to get a nose job. and the son is secretly smoking pot in order to get through his bar mitzvah lessons. And it's like a religious Jewish family, but not really religious. And he lives in a neighborhood of not, you know, not all Jewish people, obviously. And it's this bland suburban scene, and it keeps growing and growing. It's awesome. The movie was awesome. I don't know how to describe it any more than I did. I mean, I'm recommending it very highly. Nobody gets raped in the movie. Nobody gets shot in the movie. There's very little cursing in the movie. It's a very serious film. And at the end, I was shocked when I read the credits. It was Joel and Ethan Coen. I read that the movie cost $7 million to make, and it grossed like $8 or $9 million. So apparently the year, or within a year that they won the Academy Award, they were able to do this as their work of love. You know what I'm saying? It was amazing. A serious man. I highly recommend it. Flap less, coast more. MichaelSavage.com. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. North and South America and all the ships at sea. Let's go to press. I don't care if you're in a cloud form that's Sirius, or Cirrocumulus, or Cirrostratus, Altostratus, Altocumulus, Stratocumulus, Stratus, Nimbostratus, Cumulus, or Cumulonimbus. You're all welcome to listen to the Savage Nation, no matter what the barometric pressure or wind direction may be. All right, turn it off. I wanted to have some fun. I wanted to show you my range. You know, sometimes I get bored and I come up with something in the middle of nothing. I use the old windshield thing and I did this sound. Because the weather is a very important phenomenon. You didn't know I knew all of the cloud formations. I'm a boater. I know all this stuff. And we have a high pressure thing in the Bay Area right now. It's horrible. It's like I left Florida. I feel like I can't get away from the heat. It's plaguing me. And when you have a full moon, even a few days after a full moon, and heat, the skunks, they come down off the mountain. It's horrible, and I think I escape it. Then 5 in the morning, I'm like in a second sleep, and I'm breathing, and I have a nightmare that I'm in like a certain aunt's kitchen cooking some horrible ethnic meal. I say, no, I don't want it. Please take it away. It'll cause a heart attack. No, I wake up. It's the skunk smell. It's horrible. But there it is. That's life. It goes on and on and on like a bad pierogi. That's what a skunk smell. Why? I say to myself, I start cursing, and the dog looks at me. The poor dog's asleep, Teddy. He knows I hate bad smells. He knows I love good air. So we got at the boat. You see the dog opens it like, he looks at me like, the air's good, right, Dad? Yes, you're right, Teddy. It's good. Like, over the weekend, I took the boat up the coast. About an hour up the coast, you know something, there's something to be said for being at sea. Not another boat in sight. What a pleasure. What a pleasure not to be, you know, cut off by a Yahoo and this and that. And the dog lifts up his head and he breathes in the air. You know, it was beautiful. There was one negative, as everything, because there's absolutely no perfection on the planet. There's no such thing as goodwill towards man. Or like one day, give me one day where everything goes right. Even the boat ride, you're not going to believe this. I'm 2 miles off, a mile or two offshore. You know, the landform is on the right. I'm passing a certain area. All of a sudden, a bunch of flies fly onto the boat. Like a little tribe of flies. Fly on the boat and they start bothering me. And they're not normal flies. There's some kind of weird, like, sea fly. I don't know what they're called. They have, like, little crawly things. Like, they crawl like cockroaches. And no matter what you do, I use the old European underwear, undershirt swing. You can't kill them. I didn't know what to do. So the next day, I prepared. We went and got, you're not going to believe it. It's disgusting. I got fly paper. They still sell fly paper. God bless the guy who still makes fly paper. I had to go back the next day onto the boat and hang fly paper from the inside of the boat because I was afraid that they, like, breed in 2 days. They would lay eggs somewhere, and I'd wake up, there'd be 10 million flies on the boat. Oh, God. So I said, then I go to sleep, and I wake up 5 in the morning. It's like a bad pierogi got left out in the sun, and it's the skunk. So I start cursing. I'm jumping around in a dark room trying to close windows, turn on the air conditioner. The poor dog's looking at me, and I start muttering to the dog, why does God make a creature like a skunk? I start cursing skunks in general. But it's not the skunks. Do you know why there's a proliferation of them here in Marin County? They won't kill murderers, and they won't kill skunks. They took away all the predators that could kill the skunk. They don't let people round them up and execute them. So they proliferated, and they're driving humans out of here. This is what's going on. Insanity. Same with DDT. All the schmucks. all the putzes with environmental idiocy. They banned the use of DDT, and malaria has resurged around the globe. Hundreds of thousands of people have died and have been suffering from malaria since the schmucks banned the use of DDT. Now, you may say, well, didn't you read Silent Spring by Rachel Carson? I most certainly did. I probably know a lot more about the environment than you may think. And no one is talking about the indiscriminate use of DDT again, where you kill the bald eagle. We are talking about the sane application of DDT to kill mosquitoes so that people don't get malaria, for example. But you see, there's no such thing as balance in any of these extremist movements, wherever they come from, left, right, or center. Extremists are locked into their doxies, and they don't have any reason whatsoever. Which leads me now to the next subject. Although Friday is Religion Day, I have a confession to make. It's not that I become an atheist exactly. I believe in the presence of a creator or God. No, personally, more strongly than ever, I don't believe in organized religion at all. No more. I've given up. I can't take it anymore. I'll tell you my reasons at another time. I can't explain it. There's something going on in me. I don't know what it is. I mean, when God came around, I don't think he said you have to have a religion. It's like, you know, religions are like political parties. We can't have a republic without the Democrats and Republicans. We don't know how to run our own country. We need the schmucks in Washington to rob us and spend it on themselves and their cronies. It's sort of the same thing with, like, Religion Incorporated. Why can't I believe in a creator, a supreme being, and not have to go into some mumbo-jumbo house of worship in order to reach him? I'm not capable of reaching him myself. I'm in a dialogue with the creator virtually all day long, constantly. I don't know how I can take it anymore. It's as though I'm crying out for God on a daily basis. He don't answer. He's busy somewhere else. He's on Jupiter. But at least I talk to him. He hears me, I'm sure. I don't need a house of worship. If you do, God bless you. How did I get here? I don't even know how I got here. Talking about flies and piroshkis, I guess.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Dedicated to all the skunks that plague me. It's Monday. Flap less, toast more is my motto. So I've been talking about Boardwalk Empire, B-O-R-E-D, death penalty, madmen, female attractiveness, a serious man, Walter Winchell, flies on boats, rotten piroshkis, skunks, DDT, and organized religion. If you care to join the conversation, phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I see that El Presidente has signed a small business law that will create a boondoggle for people who have no idea what business is. For example, he's going to increase SBA's express loans to $1 million from $35,000. Now, I want to ask you something. Have you ever tried to get an SBA loan? You know you could never qualify. But if you're a member of a so-called, a threatened or a group, whatever, you know, they'll give you one. Let's say you want to go expand your crack business or you need to expand your needle empire, whatever. You can get $1 million now. Microloans used by entrepreneurs and for startup capital will increase to $50,000 from $35,000. I don't know. Who's going to get this money? Who's going to get this money that Obama, $14 billion is immediately going to be dispersed? To who? Tell me who's going to get the money. You think you're going to get it? You go try. Take a look at the people signing the bill with him. You take a look at the people around Obama. You could get frightened to take a look at who's running this country. The one who frightens me the most is Senator Carl Levin. If you were Osama bin Laden hiding in a cave, would you be afraid of Senator Carl Levin when knowing he's the head of the Senate Armed Services Committee? Or Dianne Feinstein? Did you ever take a look at some of the people on our intelligence committees? I don't know how this country goes on from day to day. It looks like a group of morons from colleges that somehow seize the nation. I don't know how we don't get attacked, actually. The truth is, I don't know how we don't get attacked. There must be the people in the street must be really good. Here's some other headlines. A neo-Nazi couple find out they're Jewish. Former Air Force officers say UFOs tampered with nuclear missiles. Georgia pastor's flock stands by him despite accusations that he seduced young boys. Jet careens to safe landing at New York Airport. UK owner of Segway company dies driving one of his Segways off a cliff. You know, I'm sorry it happened. I've never seen a curse like the Segway. All over the city, morons on Segway. Who would ride that? Would your father have ever ridden a Segway? I could just imagine what my father would have said if he saw a grown putz driving around with a Segway on a sidewalk. I could just hear him to this day in the DeSoto driving to work, grimly holding onto the wheel with an ashen face, facing another day in the market with uncertainty because there was no socialism then. Nothing, no health care, no Medicare, nothing. He had to do it all on his own. But he sees a grown man, a schmuck, driving around in a two-wheeled Segway blocking traffic with a pair of shorts on. What a putz, he would say. I don't even have the words for it. My favorite one here in San Francisco, whoever rents these should be arrested. They should put into San Quentin for what they do. There are little three-wheeler bumper cars that they rent, and you see people in helmets riding around on regular roadways, and you ask yourself as you're trying to drive to a studio or to work, what moron would get pleasure riding around in a bumper car on a street with a helmet on? And they look, they're riding around looking, oh, there's a building, there's a park, there's a dog, there's a tree. What do they see? Well, you see the schmucks in a bus that they cut the top off, whatever they call, one of the sightseeing buses. Whatever they look, everything they look at is a brilliant thing to them. They ride by, there's a building, here's an area where it was very well known for coffee, you look at a camera, every minute a camera. The camera comes out. Over here, the area where the taffy was made originally in 1940, click, right? Over here, the telegraph was invented, man, click, another. Who's going to look at all these pictures? Who are they taking them for? Is there somebody back in Minneapolis who actually wants to see anything they took a picture of? The things they really want to see pictures of, the guy wouldn't show you to begin with. That has to be discovered by the FBI by going into his hard drive. But the pictures they do show you, you saw 14,000 times already. And the bus goes by, and I hear the beatnik went by, put a needle in his behind, right in this spot, and he had a heroin overdose in this sewer, and the bookstore. I never saw anything, but the little cars are so dangerous. Why would anybody even legalize them? Three wheels, they're yellow, they look like ugly little hornets, and usually it's two stupid idiots with helmets on. Everything they're looking at. Look at the dog. There's the building built in 1918. It was occupied by somebody you never heard of. But I guarantee you, if I tell you the name, they're going to take the picture. On and on and on and on. What's this story? Neo-Nazi couple. This got my attention. Find out they're Jewish. That's a real scream. Let me read this one. Two Polish neo-Nazis who were childhood sweethearts and later became skinheads have discovered what for them is a shocking family secret. They're actually Jewish. Oh, I could say something about that. Pawel and Ola, identified only by their first names, are the subject of a CNN documentary about Poles rediscovering the Jewish roots generations after their ancestors hid their religion. Their religion and to escape persecution in the world. A few years ago, Ola found out from Warsaw's Jewish New Orleans that both she and her husband are technically Jews. It was unbelievable. Turned out that we had Jewish roots. It was a shock, she said. Why? Hitler was part Jewish. At the time, she and Pawel were active in Warsaw's neo-Nazi movement. I was a nationalist 100%. Back then, when we were skinheads, it was all about white power. The Jews were the biggest plague and the worst evil of this world, Powell said. Both 33, they have now embraced their Jewish identity and are active in their local Orthodox synagogue. Oh, please. You know, this doesn't sound realistic to me. I don't believe the story. How do you like that? Again, what this is a CNN attempt to smash nationalism. They're trying to associate a love of country with all of a sudden you're a neo-Nazi. You know, believe me, there's a big difference between being a nationalist and being a Nazi. Trust me on that one. Chicago, Illinois. Mark, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Matt, Michael, do you believe that the dialogue in these films that come out on HBO, whether it's Deadwood or this newest one, Boardwalk Empire, where they drop the F-bomb every other line. It's like they're in a room saying, hey, these people paid to get edgy. We've got to throw so many F-bombs in there. But it
No, I noticed that. It's a poor excuse for bad writing and an overall bad script. I had relatives who've since passed that would never watch a movie or a TV show. It's gratuitous. They don't need it. They don't need it. I mean, do I use any of those words? A, I'm not allowed to use them, but I don't use them. Do I need them to attract an audience? You don't really need them if you have a brain. People don't need to hear that. You know, it's the gutter language. It's gutter language from people who speak 50 words of English. That's all they know how. They use it as a noun and a verb in 13 different directions because they have no English skills. My dog has a larger vocabulary than the average rap star. You know that or not?
I know that. And by the way, you've inspired me to go back. I've been reading for pleasure. I've been reading Dashiell Hammett, who, as you know, was a big-time communist but a good writer.
That's right.
Who really prided himself on writing in the vernacular of the man on the street. You'll find no more compelling dialogue in his novels and character development and so forth. There's not an F-bomb in sight, and it feels very contrived. It was unwatchable. I can't watch it.
Yes, the advent of the dirty word in our society, as you well know, came from a certain quarter of the entertainment business. It has now polluted the entire landscape of entertainment. But it started with one particular subset of the population that has a very low vocabulary and a very high number of curse words to describe virtually everything.
Now, you're a little bit older than me. Does this ring true? My father is an Arizona cowboy, okay? A man's man. I never heard the man swear in my life, okay? But they tried to put this out there. That
no, as a matter of fact, men in your father's generation, if they heard a man curse in public and they had a wife or daughter present, men would go over and say, hey, buddy, my wife is here. Don't use foul language. And they punch him in the mouth if they did it again, incidentally.
But it just doesn't ring true. I mean,
it just happened at a tennis match about 3 weeks ago at Forest Hills. Some foul-mouthed drunk was using dirty language, and a middle-aged woman, told him to knock it off, and he wouldn't. He got louder, and her husband, who's like 70, had to go and get into a fight with the guy over it. So it's this degeneration. I understand that. Thank you for the call. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I apologize for not using dirty language and sounding like other people in the business. New York Joe, you're on the Savage Nation from WOR. What's on your mind, Joe? I hit the wrong button. I knocked Joe off the air. So what, is Joe back?
I'm right here, Joe, Dr. Savage.
Go ahead, please.
I'd like to ask you about organized religion. I know that you believe in moral absolutes. And I'm not sure if this is what you mean when you say that you don't believe in organized religion. But like David Skolansky said, who was a famous poker player, he said, if there's 100 religions in the world, 99 have to be wrong. Is that what you mean when you say you don't believe in organized religion?
Well, I've heard something like that before from someone, which is that all the religions can't be right if they all say that only their God is the only way. I understand that. But I would say that that's a distortion of man's view of God rather than a distortion of God himself.
Well, to that, I would say, why would the superior being be condescending to the inferior being? Why not would he require it the other way around?
What do you mean by condescending? In what manner?
He's asking the inferior being, which is man, he's pandering to him rather than saying be like me. He's saying I'll be like you.
I really can't follow you. I really don't know what you. I mean, I understand that you're a smart guy and you're an atheist, and you want to convince me that atheism is the clever way to follow. But get back to me after you have cancer. I mean, God forbid. Tell me if you're still an atheist.
I love your show. I really do.
Okay, I'm joking. Look, I pray to God you don't get it. But you know, you never had a bad night where you prayed to God?
No, I pray to God all the time, and that's why I'm asking you. I see cognitive dissonance in your reasoning, where you do believe.
No, okay, no, I'm being facetious, and I don't mean to be nasty, but I didn't know where you were coming from. You sound like a lawyer I know who I don't particularly like right now. You have the same voice, so forgive me. I was reacting as though it was him. So let's start from the top. Let me give you my religious view. Years ago, I read a book where a religious man wrote a book. It was a popular book, and he said that he doesn't believe God is omnipotent, just omnipresent. and that if he believed God was omnipotent, he would give up his all religion immediately. That made more sense to me than anything. What does he mean by God is not omnipotent? Meaning God cannot control minutiae on the planet, meaning every little act of every little man, every little animal, right? But God is ever-present. God is everywhere, but God does not control everyone's motions and every act. And that made sense to me. Does that make sense to you?
Because of my religious beliefs, I have to disagree with that. I do believe in God's sovereignty over even man's free will.
Okay, hold on. This is very interesting. So if a man is walking down the street and he's crossing the street with his three daughters and a car strikes them in the crosswalk and two of his daughters are killed but he is not and one daughter is maimed, that's God's will?
I would say that's God's will, and I already know where you're going with this. How can God punish innocent children?
No.
I would say,
how about in Connecticut? You're telling me that 11-year-old girl deserved to be raped and set on fire by those two animals? That was their just dessert for what? What did they do?
I don't know what they did. I am not omnipresent, as you said before, like God.
So you mean she committed a crime worse than, let's say, a mass murderer who's been protected by the liberals for 30 years on death row? So she should have been punished immediately. But the guy on death row who actually raped and murdered a 15-year-old who's been protected for 30 years, he shouldn't be punished immediately. But the 11...
No, these are things that I can't explain. I can't explain the higher mind of God, the modes of his reasoning.
Okay, so what I'm saying to you is this book that I read, actually the book was called Peace of Mind, and he was trying to describe the highest state that man can achieve in an ordinary man's life. The highest state you can achieve is peace of mind without medication, right? And the only way he could achieve this was by coming to the idea that God was not omnipotent, but he was omnipresent. That worked for me. It still works for me when I hit a dead end. Hold on, I'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back, Mr. and Mrs. North and South America, and all the ships at sea. Let's go to press. I don't care if you're in light air, light breeze, gentle breeze, moderate breeze, fresh breeze, strong breeze, near gale, gale, strong gale, storm, violent storm, or hurricane. Wherever you are on the Beaufort scale, you're welcome on the Savage Nation. Let's go to San Diego. Don, welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Savage. There's a real easy way to kill those flies on your sailboat. If you blow on them lightly, since they're used to being on the ocean, and when the wind blows, they tend to cling on to you. You blow on them lightly, you can swat them in no problem.
Wait, say that again. You blow on them lightly and what? They get stupefied from the halitosis?
Yeah, it delays their reaction. No, not from the halitosis. They're just used to being on the windy ocean. So when you blow on them, they cling on so they don't get blown away. And
oh, like if they've alighted on your dashboard. So you blow on them so they stick to it to figure they're going to be blown away. And then you swat them?
Absolutely.
And what kind of fly are they? How do they get out at sea that far?
I don't know that much. I couldn't tell you that.
Are you a sailor, Don?
Well, I go out to the islands a lot, yeah. So I get out there enough.
Oh, you go where? You go to the, where do you go? To Catalina?
Channel Islands, Catalina, absolutely.
What kind of boat are you in?
Just friend's boat these days. I had to sell my...
Beautiful. No, it's beautiful. I'm not a sailor. I admire people who know how to sail. I don't like particularly dodging them on the weekend in San Francisco Bay because they're generally as arrogant as kayakers and bicycle riders because they won't vary their course by 1 degree. They'd rather have a head-on collision than change 1 degree. You have a powerboat, so I don't have to move, you schmuck. Meanwhile, you all have a collision. You never saw such arrogance, the sailors. I'm a very defensive boat driver. I usually divert. I'll move the... But you should see the idiots in the sailboats. I have a sailboat, and I have the right of way, and I don't care if we kill everybody. I'm not changing course by one iota. Not 1 degree off. Not 2 degrees. I'm staying on my course, you schmucks, you. I never saw such stupidity as I see in sailors on the bay. Never. Arrogance and stupidity like bicycle riders, jesters with their behinds in your face in the rearview mirror.
Savage.
flap less and coast more with the Savage Nation. You know the phone number. I haven't directed you yet to michaelsavage.com. There's terrific articles there. Yes, I want you to see things on it. So I'm driving you there. But there really are articles worth seeing. What I found is amazing, about 30 seconds on this. I have about 4.1 million unique viewers a month, which is small compared to the big sites, but large compared to the small sites. What's amazing about it is that it doesn't seem to matter what I do. At a certain point, the numbers are pretty consistent every day on a website. It's something very, very interesting that once people become attenuated to doing a certain thing, you don't lose them and you don't gain new ones. I don't know how to explain it. It's almost the same with an audience in radio, which is that you build an audience over a certain number of years. It doesn't vary that much. It becomes the size maintains itself. I don't know how that works. It's a habit, a listening habit, reading habit. I don't know exactly how it works, but there it is. Okay, let's go to the callers. Daniel San Diego, welcome to the program.
Hey, Michael, I just have to disagree with you on your comments about organized religion. From the very beginning, the Judeo-Christian religion, its cornerstone has been organization, and there's references throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament where organization is key to keeping the believers together. The Bible...
Let me react. I'll make it simple and sarcastic. Different pews for different views. Okay, I accept that. But the Bible is replete with congregation. I understand that and such. But do you find religious leaders today to be worthy of the word leaders any more than politicians or leaders?
Absolutely not. My next comment was going to be, God's intention was organization and order from the very beginning. Does that mean that humans are perfect and that we haven't distorted this view of organization? Absolutely not. We have. But that doesn't mean...
You look at religions. Originally, for example, the Christian religion was taught in Latin. What was that for? That was so that a small band of people could bamboozle the uneducated and let them think that only they could reach God through the language of Latin. That's very well established what it was done. It was to hoodwink the general public. Now you take a religion like Judaism, and I'm sorry to tell you that there was a bad joke told by Lenny Bruce 40 years ago where he said Judaism will eventually die out because it's in a foreign language. And unfortunately, it does leave an awful lot of people limp to go into a temple and not understand a word of what people are saying because Hebrew is a very difficult language.
Absolutely. The Judaism, in fact, was completed and finished through Christianity. And, of course, we believe in the Jewish Messiah, and in our case, it's Jesus Christ. We believe that he was the Messiah that was predicted.
Let's not have a proselytizing here. Now, so that all Jews are idiots, they didn't evolve, is that it?
No, absolutely not. In fact, Christianity...
So you patronize the poor Jews who haven't evolved like you?
No, absolutely not. Jews are, in fact, held up in Christian circles. In fact, we consider them...
Oh, wait, are you a Christian or a Jewish Christian?
What was that?
Are you a Christian or a Jewish Christian?
I'm a Christian. I'm not Jewish by any means.
Because there's another group called Jewish Christians who are another subset that's very difficult to comprehend. I'm for let people what they want, whatever way they want to find God. It doesn't matter to me what their religion is. I've always been very, in my own mind, you know, I don't really care. As I'm joking when I said different pews for different views, I don't really see a difference, truthfully. However, when a religion starts to teach people to kill others who don't follow their way, that's not a religion to me. That's a political war machine.
And I'd agree with you there. I definitely don't agree with anybody trying to push out any other religion. As Mother Teresa said, I love all religions. But that still doesn't discredit the fact that Jesus said he was the only way to heaven. And that's what Christians believe and why we're so...
Well, let's have that discussion. So Jesus was a Jewish rabbi, correct?
Yes.
So let end the story. So how did the whole religion evolve?
Well, Jesus was a Jewish rabbi that came... and he promised and said that he was the Messiah, the Jewish Messiah. The Jewish rejected him as the Messiah. They thought he was crazy, and then he was crucified. But Jesus resurrected, and his believers, his followers, saw him, his resurrected body, and in turn began to preach about his resurrected body and were killed for it. And through the persecution of the Christian church, it spread throughout Rome. Paul, who was a rabbi.
I understand and I appreciate the genius of your explanation. I agree with it. So where does that leave those who are not Christians? they're less than you are in your mind.
No, absolutely not.
I had this discussion with Jerry, with Reverend Falwell, who I respected greatly until we had a falling out, when he actually said that only Christians can go to heaven. So I said, you mean to say that Buddhists can't go to heaven, Jews can't go to heaven, Hindus can't go to heaven, atheists can't go to heaven, American Indians can't go to heaven? He said, yes.
Well, the problem with that is that he didn't really explain why Christians believe that. It's not that Christians, the term Christians, anybody who calls themselves Christians, are the only ones going to heaven.
So in other words, a person could be almost a saint-like in their life, give to the poor, etc. But if they don't believe in your religion, they're going to go to hell?
And if somebody
is unsaintly in their life, miserable, horrible, nasty, thieving, but they believe in Jesus, they're going to go to heaven?
Michael, every person is worthy of going to hell for our sins. No one is actually
worthy. I'm glad to hear it. I thought that some got a pass simply because they were a member of a chosen religion. I'm glad you look at it that way. Because I met some of the worst people on the planet are very religious. And I'm not limiting it to a specific religion. There's some of the biggest phonies I ever met in my life are members of certain religions, and they're thieves. They're crooks. They rob from everybody.
See, but we can't look at people who claim to follow religion and say that that's the religion. Jesus clearly said, I'm the way, the truth, and the life, and no man goes to the Father but through me. And that's
okay, I understand. That's like the communists used to say that pure communism never failed. It was capitalism and capitalists who blocked the success of communism. And I joked about it last week, and true enough, this Turban Durban comes up over the weekend and says, Obama had great ideas, but his ideas failed because the mean Republicans didn't enact all of his ideas. The same thing. You're always blaming somebody for something.
I'm not sure I follow you on that.
That's the problem. You see, you got to follow me on that. I appreciate it. God bless America. Different pews for different views. Flat bless Coast More. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. New York. Bill, WOR. Go ahead. You're up on the Savage Nation.
Yeah. Hi, Michael. One point, I was an apprentice to a Lakota shaman, and the way he expressed the religions is that they're all like spokes on a wheel leading to the center, which is the...
Wait. You're talking about me. I'm the one who originated that 10, 15 years ago. Don't you remember the healing wheel?
Well, you know, I did hear you say that, but this Lakota shaman that I worked with had...
Hold on. Wait a minute. This is very intriguing. How long ago did you work with this Lakota shaman?
Back in around... From 1998 to about 2004 when he passed away.
Well, he must have robbed it from me, because I've been talking about the healing wheel, where each religion is a spoke that leads to the center. He must have been listening to the show. You sure he was truly a Lakota? That he didn't just come from Lake Ronkonkoma? Was he an actual Native American?
Yes, his name was Grandfather Wallace Black Elk.
He was a Lakota, so he must have listened to me on talk radio, because I talked about the healing wheel where the center was God and each spoke was a different religion led to the center of God. Maybe I stumbled upon it myself. It could be that in my research for Earth Medicine, Earth Foods, I stumbled upon that. I don't recall it, but I'm willing to accept the fact that maybe the Lakota Sioux did see it that way. Now, was that unique to this man, or was it unique to the religion, to the Lakota?
It was unique. From this man teaching me, this is what he taught me. Now, on another,
and he must have listened to the radio show, because I'm telling you the truth, he didn't discover that on his own. He was probably a smart guy, and he listened to the Savage Nation to get his ideas. Okay, but let's put that aside. I actually still believe that. It's the only way to explain all the religions on earth and not put anyone down or put anyone up. In other words, if people are seeking God, what do you care how they're getting there?
Exactly. And
isn't that more accepting of your fellow man and, in a sense, more Christian? To accept that people will find God in their own way. Can't you leave them alone? Why must they follow your way? I don't understand that.
Yeah, and that's what leads to, he said, that's what leads to fanaticism. If you look at...
Well, I'm going to tell you something else, Bill. We agree on that. I'll tell you something else. Like, when you can get so fanatic with religion, there are Orthodox Jewish people who follow, I don't know how many hundreds of commandments a day. You go into a temple... Do you realize how wrapped up they are in specific rituals? A way to wrap this, a way to wrap that, a way to bend this, a way to bend that. They have to wear this, they have to wear that. Turn this way, turn that way. If you turn that way, you're going to get condemned to hell. God's going to punish you if you pick up your foot to the right. If you turn your head to the... How can you live that way?
Yeah, those are just all rituals. Those are a way to get you to the great mystery. But they're only rituals. And people get hung up in the rituals and forget the great mystery, which the mind can never totally grasp anyway.
That is beautiful. That is beautiful. I totally agree with you. They can't. They forget the great mystery. That's right. When you get caught up in the ritual, it's almost a way of bringing your mind away from thinking about the so-called great mystery or the abyss. Most people don't even want to think about it, so they think about the ritual in order to forget the fact. It's like looking at the bagel, not the whole.
Exactly. And at one point he said, if you look at, say, in the Christian religion of Christ, you never see him pointing to his head. He's always pointing to his heart, because those are the that's the only place where you're truly going to find the answer. The mind will never comprehend the mind of the Creator or why things happen, and we try to explain it with our minds. It's impossible.
Well, you know, when I started talking about religion on this show, and I don't want to get sidetracked because I'm having a good time and it's only Monday yet. Religion comes up Friday. I remember saying to I think it was Reverend Forbo when we had that great debate here on the Savage Nation, which we you know what, Beowulf, let's get it for Friday. That's a it's a great I lost a lot of people who didn't like me after that. I got letters for years afterwards where people were putting me down and all that. Because I was I didn't accept Jerry Falwell's view of reality, that is, that only Christians can go to heaven. But I was shocked that Jerry Falwell said that. And then we debated it afterwards, and there were many other Christian theologians who called and said he was wrong, that they don't agree that only Christians can go to heaven. So I thought it was a rather narrow view of what heaven is, and a rather narrow view of Christianity, incidentally. But having said that, I thought about the Native Americans who had been on in North America, for example, for at least 10,000 years prior to the arrival of the European. Is that fairly accurate geologically and anthropologically, about 10,000 years?
I believe so, yes.
All right. Well, I'm a trained anthropologist with an actual master's degree before my PhD in another field. It's 10,000 years of living here in North America. You're telling me in these 10,000 years there were no saintly human beings and no devils? That they were all pagans and heathens and deserved to go to hell? I don't want to accept that. I want to accept that in any generation, at any time, amongst any religion, amongst any people, amongst any ethnic group, there are saints and sinners.
Absolutely, yes.
Now, is that, in your mind, my view, is that your view? Do you share that way of looking at people?
Well, my view is that there's actually this whole notion of heaven and hell are a little bit misguided. The idea of reincarnation, in that we're eternal beings that constantly are evolving into new and different beings, and really it's just a...
Well, let's talk about that. How do we know that's true? In other words, what's the good of it if we don't remember the last being? I've talked about that on the show. Let's say there is truth to your idea that there is reincarnation. What's the good of it if you don't remember who you were in the last incarnation, whether you were a mouse or an eagle? If you don't remember it, what's the good of it?
Because you're thinking of it in terms of your mind. On a soul level, on a heart level, you remember it all.
And so you remember you were another creature in another life?
No, I don't remember it with my mind. But on some level, there's a soul memory of it. Now, we're trying to explain in terms of actual memory. Well, that's impossible to do that.
But my whole point about reincarnation, in essence, reincarnation is a reward or a punishment, is the way I've looked at it. Otherwise, what's the point of reincarnation? Then you'd have to say God is just playing with us. So in other words, it has to be a reward or a punishment. If you are a son of a gun on this planet and you are a mean, nasty defense attorney who robbed people and they believe you're a good guy, you should come back as a lower creature like a rat. Okay? Or if, on the other hand, you're a decent lawyer who used your law degree for the betterment of humanity, you should come back as an eagle. I mean, I'm giving a rough analogy. But what's the good of it if you don't remember it? Well, in other words, you go before God and he says, you are a rotten, stinking the lawyer. You robbed people. You pretended you were a good guy. You are not a good guy. So you're not coming back as a human being. You're coming back as a cockroach in Poland in a latrine in 1936. So you mean for that 1 second you get to know what it is?
No. That's the idea is look at it in terms of a classroom, that it's a learning process. Like, say, Adolf Hitler. He comes back to learn his lesson by having to relive some of the horror that he
should only come back as one of the Jewish children who was thrown up in the air for bayonet practice, maybe through eternity. That would be about the appropriate punishment for Adolf Hitler. He should be thrown in the air 60 million times through eternity and caught on a bayonet and scream and feel the pain of the bayonet going through his guts like the Jewish children are thrown in the air by the Germans. I mean, can you ever believe there'd be a just punishment for what he did to this world?
Well, he will have to. He will have to relive that in some way.
I think I wish to God that were true. I only wish to God that were true. But I don't really believe that, because we have Hitler alive again now. His name is Ahmadinejad. This is a reincarnation of absolute and pure evil on a political scale. We had him in Haman in ancient Iran. We had him in the Middle Ages. We had him in Hitler. And I'm not Nostradamus. I'm telling you, Ahmadinejad is a repeat of history all over again. The man is saying what he's going to do. The man is going to do it, and no one stops him. How do you explain that? How do you explain that the world doesn't stop Hitler when he's back again? Instead, he comes to New York, and they afford him all of the dignity of a president of the United States. How is that possible?
Well, it's another lesson in fanaticism. How do we stand up to fanaticism?
Well, we don't stand up to fanaticism. We have a government that is kowtowing to fanaticism. Especially, it's gotten so bad under Obama that they treat him with more dignity than they do someone who's actually trying to save America. How do you explain that? How do you explain the fact that we just learned today that thousands and thousands of people who were FBI agents cheated on their exam? How did that happen under Obama?
Well, these are all...
How did we find out today the TSA agents, 10,000 of the stupidest people on Earth, now have top security clearance? 10,000 of the stupidest people on the planet have top security clearance. I'll be right back. Is the Savage Nation Monday edition. I'm actually on the edge of my seat because it's only 1 week to go till my new book, Trickle Up Poverty, hits the stores. And I am going to ask you to go out there. I am going to ask you to buy the book. I am going to ask you to walk around with it in supermarkets, churches, synagogues, wherever you are, because they're walking billboards. And I have to tell you right now, nobody has a plan like I do on the Savage Manifesto for Saving America, which I'm not going to read for you right now. I'll invite you to go to michaelsavage.com and take a look at it. Incidentally, for those of you who collect these things, autographed copies are available only on michaelsavage.com. And I mention that for a reason. I don't know how many people who are writing books have books become collectibles. I have found some of my used books going for as much as $180 on Amazon. I was shocked. Early editions of some of my health books are selling for $150, $180. I'm telling you that because it's a fact of reality. Go check it out yourself. So therefore, I want to tell you something. The books I write are meant to last. Earth Medicine, Earth Foods, 1972. It's still in print, I believe. So there it is. That's the difference between me and a picture on a cover. New York WOR, Charlie, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, I'm an Orthodox Jew, and Judaism essentially believes that people of all faiths can go to heaven. You don't have to be a Jew to go to heaven, and therefore there's... I'm sorry?
No, thank God. I'm glad somebody believes that.
You know, it's funny because we're called the chosen people, and yet, in a sense, we're more tolerant than, you know, Christians essentially believe that if you don't accept Jesus, you're going to roast in hell for eternity. And Muslims have a variation of that belief. And I never want to criticize people of other faiths because there are great people of all faiths. But it's ironic that that Judaism, in a sense...
Let me ask you something. Why are you ultra-religious? What do you think you gain by being so, as opposed to just being of the Jewish faith? Why do you think, what do you think of when you do your rituals and you follow the kosher laws? What do you think you're going to gain from that?
Well, I think that the Torah, the 613 commandments that God gave us is a blueprint for creation. I actually think it's a great way of living.
All right, well, that's another story. See, now that's another story. It's a roadmap to life.
Not religious at all.
No, I'm saying it's a roadmap on how to lead your life. It's an operational manual in your mind for how to lead your life in a religious manner. I accept that as well. It's just not for me. It doesn't work for me. See, that's the whole thing. I respect people who are very religious, but I can't be that way. That's all. Forgive me, for I do not know I sin.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We'll be right back. today on the Savage Nation, we talked a lot about the media, and I've asked you, have you stopped watching television for entertainment? And what do you do instead? Do you go to movies? Do you listen to the radio? Do you rent DVDs? Do you go to church? Have you noticed the quality of entertainment television and how they've declined in quality over the recent years? What was the last straw for you? What is the worst TV series in recent history? And who do you dislike the most as a movie or TV director? What about the constant, meaningless coverage of the upcoming election on cable news television? Have you heard a single TV commentator, even on Fox, address the real issues that matter to you in any substantive way? And which is more informative to you, television or radio? Do you fear that the election will change nothing, even if the Republicans gain power? Wow. Today we also reviewed the HBO disaster Boardwalk Empire, the second episode. And the reason I reviewed it last week and this week is because it was touted as a replacement for The Sopranos. It was supposed to be great. It cost $20 million. And it had an all-star cast, so to speak, including the very, very significant directorship of Martin Scorsese. I could not believe it was one of the most unwatchable shows I've ever seen in my life. As I said last week, the lead character, Steve Buscemi, has a voice that sounds like someone on laughing gas. His face looks like he has a medical condition. Someone said he looks like Stan Laurel, if you know who he is. He should never have been chosen to play the lead gangster who created the mob in Atlantic City in the 1920s, because he doesn't have the gravitas for it. Steve Buscemi is a fine supporting actor. Supporting roles is where he's always been showcased. Number two, allegedly it was directed by Martin Scorsese, which I don't doubt, as his name is all over it. But the directing per se is meaningless because the story is so pat and so predictable. Finally, the constant flashbacks to the 1920s was terrible, unlistenable. The music was terrible. It was as though Scorsese was trying to create a documentary of the era as opposed to a compelling miniseries for HBO. Now, why am I talking about this? Well, I'm talking about it because I believe the princes of Hollywood, just like the princes of politics, have lost touch with the people. It goes to the heart of what's wrong in America today. Both the entertainment and the political worlds don't care what the people think. They have forgotten that the people need to be as it was appealed to. But the people don't seem to matter to them. The big shots could care less. They're producing series like this for their own entertainment and to reward themselves. In essence, Steve Buscemi, Martin Scorsese, Larry David, they're all members of the same sorority from Brooklyn or Manhattan going back to the same period. And they think that the whole world can't wait for the next flatulence to emerge from their bowels. It was painful to watch Boardwalk Empire. Terrible. Now take a look at what else HBO offers, and here's where we get political. They offer a left-wing magpie, a hackneyed doper named Bill Maher. And who is it that's actually entertained by him? Certainly not the majority of the American people. They detest Maher's anti-American politics. So who is it who finds him funny? It's the same crowd that seems to think that Steve Buscemi can play a lead role. The same crowd that thinks Larry David's attacks on Jesus are entertaining. And so therefore, this is the crisis that America is facing. The princes of Hollywood and the princes of politics and their loss of touch with the people. There's a lot more to be said about Boardwalk Empire, and I'm going to say more about it. Some of the reviews from the people themselves were pretty right on target. I want to read a few of them. One person wrote, "I gave this masterpiece, so-called, a second chance, despite the colossal failure of Buscemi as Thompson in episode one. I fully expected him to fail again, and he didn't disappoint. His voice, his mannerisms, and his entire presence carry all the gravitas of Stan Laurel." One final question asks another listener. What's with the opening sequence that has Buscemi standing in the sand while the surf washes over his shoes? He's wimpy, sure, but he ain't dumb, and only a dope would do that. In all, the most disappointing presentation, and one which will not have me switching from Sunday Night Football again. So the people aren't quite as stupid as the HBO princes think. The so-called Imam Rauf spoke on television telling us yet again that it's the right thing to do to build a victory mosque.
It's the right thing to do. Our community wants it. And now America needs it. And the Muslim world needs it. We have to wage peace. The military campaign against radical extremists from my faith community is a military campaign. The campaign for winning hearts and minds is an important part of that campaign. We know how to do it.
And he says they know how to do
it. And we're committed to doing it. We're ready, willing, and able to serve our country and to serve our
faith. By rebuilding Afghanistan with our tax dollars and paying off the Taliban? Continue, Ralph.
We have condemned 9/11.
And there he goes, continuing to claim he's a moderate.
For the souls of your loved, lost ones. If 9/11 happens there again, I want to be the first to die.
Well, first
Muslims want to stand.
You got to stop
right
the
there.
Tape. First to die. Wow, how dramatic. Play it again.
If 9/11
what
happens
does that
there
mean?
Again, I want to be the first to die.
Does he know something we don't know? Somebody should remind Bill Clinton that Hillary Clinton is the Clinton in office. Here he is trying stand-up comedy. First, the vegetarian routine.
I went on essentially a plant-based diet. I live on beans, legumes, vegetables, fruit. I drink a protein supplement every morning. No dairy. I drink almond milk mixed in with fruit and a protein powder, so I get the protein for the day when I start the day out.
Now this.
They got the Wrestling Federation lady in Connecticut and the Witchcraft lady in Delaware. And
very funny.
I tell you, so far they've gathered up about everybody for this tea party but the Mad Hatter and Alice in Wonderland.
And Nancy Pelosi responds to a question about someone else who thinks that they're funny.
Do you think that it was appropriate that he testified today?
Of course I think it's appropriate. He's an American.
Quite a mockery.
He comes before the committee, has a point of view. He can bring attention to an important issue like immigration.
This is the only way Pelosi will touch immigration. But the D for Dim from Maryland, Steny Hoyer, disagrees with Pelosi.
Comedian Stephen Colbert testified before a congressional committee in his fake comedic character at a time when the country faces real problems, sir. Was this an embarrassment for the House?
I think his testimony was not appropriate. No, I think it was an embarrassment for Mr. Colbert more than the House. He was called.
Well, he was called by the Democratic chair of
called,
the subcommittee.
You asked me, Chris, whether the testimony was appropriate. I think it was not appropriate.
Mm-hmm. And he should not have been called.
Well, I don't know about whether he was called, but what he had to say, I think, was not the way it should have been said. If he had a position on the issues, he should have given those issues, and I think you asked my personal opinion.
You regret it?
I think it was inappropriate.
To me, it was an embarrassment all the way around. And here we are. So we're sitting in talk radio. It's a commercial medium, considered an entertainment medium. Talk radio is in the world of AM radio. And so in AM radio, it largely was a music format. In the early days of radio, talk radio comes from the entertainment section of the band. It's still an entertainment medium when you think about it. So in order to survive and thrive, as I have done, you have to be entertaining. You have to be educational. You have to be captivating. There's a lot of things you have to be, or you wouldn't rise to where I've risen and stayed there for so long. But now I'm telling you that the show has to change. The show has to change because America is changing, the format is changing, and I'm changing. And I suspect the audience is changing. I'll be right back.
Savage.
As you know, the Obama administration pushed their health care bill against the will of the American people. The high cost, less care, and despite the fact that nobody who voted for the bill even read it thoroughly. Now, as more and more info about the bill comes out, more Democrats are starting to speak out and pretending that they're against it. Joining us now on the Savage Nation from the Cato Institute is Michael Tanner, who wrote an article entitled, In November, It's Democrats Versus Obamacare. Michael Tanner, welcome to the Savage Nation. What are you trying to say with your article?
Thanks for having me on, Michael. Always a pleasure. Well, we find it interesting that there are no Democrats that anyone has been able to find who are running campaigns based on their vote in favor of Obamacare. No one is going out and trumpeting how they voted for this and forced through this new health care law. On the other hand, we are seeing several Democratic candidates who are actually running television and radio ads pointing out the fact that they voted against Obamacare. There were 34 votes from Democrats against the final health care bill. 31 of those Democrats are now seeking re-election, and they seem to be making a big deal about the fact that they were opposed to the bill.
Well, health care was supposed to be their greatest achievement, and where has their support gone?
Well, it's interesting. David Axelrod, of course, was saying that he still believes that someday Obamacare will become more popular, that if people just think about it long enough, eventually they'll change their minds. But the fact is, all the public opinion polls show that by overwhelming margins, the public has not warmed up to this. And in fact, strong majorities favor repeal of Obamacare. So I think what you're getting here is Democrats facing political reality. They pass something that not only won't work on a policy basis, but is a political non-starter as well.
How many of these Dems who say they're not supporting Obamacare have actually said we need to repeal it? Any?
Well, that's very important because there is a certain amount of hypocrisy here. These are Democrats who are saying, hey, I was opposed to Obamacare, but when it comes down to actually doing something about repealing Obamacare, they seem to be missing in action. Right now, there are two different discharge petitions in the House of Representatives. The discharge petition is a way of forcing a floor vote on something that Nancy Pelosi doesn't want you to vote on. It can overrule her objections and take a bill to the floor and require a vote on it. There are two different Republican bills to repeal Obamacare. The discharge petitions would force that vote. All but five Republicans have so far signed those discharge petitions, but not a single one of the 34 Democrats who voted against Obamacare have done so. So these Democrats are now going out and saying they oppose the bill, but they aren't willing to put their neck on the line in order to get it repealed.
Why haven't the Democrats who are against Obamacare done anything? Does Pelosi still have any kind of power? Does she frighten them that much?
That's a very good question. I mean, in fairness, signing a discharge petition against your own speaker is something pretty much akin to treason, and there's no doubt that Nancy Pelosi would retaliate against any of the Democrats who signed a discharge petition. It's something that's very rarely done. But these are Democrats who in their television and radio ads are saying how independent they are, how willing they are to stand up to the leadership in Washington. If that's true on an issue that's so important, like Obamacare, one would think they'd have the courage to stand up and be counted.
Well, this doesn't seem to be that big of an issue to the Republicans right now either.
Well, certainly the economy is the number one issue, and one can't blame people for campaigning on that. But with the numbers like are seeing here, overwhelming opposition to Obamacare, what it's going to do to the economy, what it's going to do to the American healthcare system, what it does to just freedom, you would really expect it to be a bigger issue on the Republican plate. And I have to say, in fairness to note, there are still five Republicans who have not signed this discharge petition, including people like Kirk, who's running for the Senate in Illinois, and a number of others who have fairly high-profile positions, haven't signed on to repeal yet.
I don't know why they're remaining silent.
Well, of course we know that actual repeal is not very likely, given that the president can veto a repeal bill. So the next couple of years, they may just think this is not really going to happen. But I do think there is an important point to be made by forcing people to vote on it and go on the record about whether or not they face repeal or favor repeal, especially these Democrats who now say they're opposed to it. I think there's a lot to be said about that, and there are going to be other votes coming up. If the Republicans take over Congress, for example, there's going to be a Republican attempt to defund Obamacare, to prevent the government funds from being used to implement it. How are they going to vote on that? I think this is an important test for them.
Where do you think it goes from here?
Well, right now, I think we're going to see a lot of rhetoric and not much action, of course, before January. But if there is a new Congress in January, I think we're going to be revisiting this. There's going to be funding issues. There's going to be implementation issues. There's going to be hearings and investigations of this. And I suspect we will see votes, whether successful or not, on repeal. At the same time, we're going to be seeing the court cases going forward. This week, there will be a hearing on the Florida, down in Florida, on the cases being brought by 13 attorneys general on repealing Obamacare, or at least the individual mandate of it. That's probably the next most important thing that's going to happen.
Are there any signs that things are going to get better?
Well, we don't know. We do know that the first court case in Virginia by Ken Cuccinelli, that case is going forward. The government tried to get it thrown out. The Obama administration said that they lacked standing, that it was an open and shut case and it shouldn't go forward. The judge there says there are important questions that need to be answered, and he did allow it to go forward. We expect the same thing to happen down in Florida. So we'll be looking at this for some time to come.
What kind of timeline are we looking at?
We're looking at quite a while. It would probably not be until next spring or summer before you got a decision at the district court level. It would then be appealed up beyond that, and probably be 2 or 3 years before it hits the Supreme Court. This is not going away.
Michael Tanner, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
It was a pleasure. Look forward to it again sometime.
Mm-hmm. Obamacare was not popular, and despite constant bombardment from the media and how great it is, Obamacare is actually becoming more and more unpopular. If the government officials want to keep their jobs, they better listen to the will of the people. All right, I'll be right back.
Savage.
The heads of two major media companies, Jeff Zucker of NBC and Jonathan Klein of CNN, were fired. And I have some questions for you. When did you stop watching CNN or MSNBC? And what was the final straw for you? What's the worst thing you've ever seen on these channels? And what could CNN and MSNBC do to get you to watch again other than hiring me and I'm not available? And which personality on CNN or MSNBC do you trust the least? And who would you like to see CNN or MSNBC to hire in order to save their credibility and their ratings? That's the starting point here on the Savage Nation. But there's a bigger point, which is interesting to me. There is a rumor amongst the Jew haters and anti-Semites that the media in America is run by Zionists, as you well know. You've heard that 1,000 times. The Zionist media this, the Zionist media that. What's intriguing to me is that both of these characters, Jeff Zucker and Jonathan Klein, although they are Jewish, were anti-Zionists. There were clearly anti-Zionist Jews in the American media. This is the paradox of the whole situation. I know it's a hard thing for most people to follow what I'm saying, but it's an interesting observation nonetheless. So two anti-Israel members of the media, both Jewish, by the way, thrown out, not because of their relationship to Israel, but because of their diehard radical left-wing orientations. That's number one. So the new owners of these channels, or the owners, one is a new owner, one is an older owner, they realize that these fellows, Klein and whatever his name is, Zuckerberg or Zucker, were running the networks into the ground for years now with their left-wing bias. And they wouldn't change. Their doxy was like a religion to them. Their doxies were so strongly embedded in them, the hatred for America. I can go down the list in a litany. I've written books on it, but you don't have to hear it. But they wouldn't change. How many times have I told you that diehards like this would rather see their newspapers blow up? Take a look at the New York Times, where Pinch Sulzberger is killing a great enterprise. Or even smaller papers. You take the San Francisco Chronicle. It used to be a decent B newspaper. It's been unreadable for years, ever since the fanatic left-wing college types took it over. And they would rather not change because they do it for their own pleasure and to entertain their friends. It's the same with CNN. It's the same with MSNBC. And frankly, I think the new owners are saying, you know, enough is enough. This is a business. This is not a hobby. Get out of here already. Go do something else. So it's going to be interesting to see who they put in at CNN. They already named him. He is somewhat of a middle of the roader in that he was the fellow who appointed Hemorrhoid to CNN originally. So he may be a little more conservative. As far as NBC goes and MSNBC, I don't know if there's any hope over there. I remember I have a little tiny bit of an insight in that I once had an MSNBC show many years ago. And I and many others are the best talent lost that show after a few months. Believe me, I'm not the only one. Everyone who was really talented was thrown off MSNBC within less than a year. And there were some pretty good people on that network. They always wanted MSNBC to be something like a girl's sorority. A girl's sorority of the radical, sarcastic left, where everything is sort of ironic but not even funny. Double irony, you know, like you're in a college beer bust and it's not funny anymore. So who could they possibly put on MSNBC to save the network? Who cares? What do I care? And what about CNN? CNN is actually worth saving. It's watched worldwide, but it's biased against America. It's biased against the family. It's biased against the church. It's biased against Israel. It's biased against the military. Its bias in favor of the criminals and the terrorists is so overwhelmingly obvious that people can't stand it anymore. So I'm going to ask you again. When did you stop watching CNN or MSNBC? Meaning, what was the show or what was the deed that was the turning point for you? And would you ever watch them again? Who would they have to hire for you to watch it again? I think these are very good questions. Look, I know you worry about what's going on in Afghanistan, what's going on in the White House. But with all of that, you shouldn't have to worry about your computer on top of everything else. So go visit my advertisers at Carbonite.com. They'll back up all your important files so they're safe no matter what happens. Use my offer code SAVAGE and you're going to get 2 months free with your subscription. That's Carbonite.com, offer code SAVAGE. 1-800-449-8255, MichaelSavage.com. What do you want to talk about in the Savage Nation? Let's go to Denver. Elise is on the air. Denver, Elise, what's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, I am a Brazilian immigrant that came here when I was 17 years old as an exchange student. I spoke no English at the time. My family still back in Brazil, very poor. It was a struggle to get here. I've always loved the U.S. I read your Liberalism is a Mental Disorder and completely fell in love with you and everything that you talk about.
There's truth in it. In other words, you probably see the world the same way. Weakness spells disaster in plain English. So what you had to find in yourself was the strength that you found it in my book. And so you say the guy's right. Everywhere I turn, I listen to these liberals. They're psychos because they don't know what they're talking about. More or less, isn't that what you're saying to me?
Yes, sir. That's exactly right. And I'm in the art field. That's my job today. I'm an art director. I struggle. I mean, 17 years of struggle to learn English, to learn the culture.
Well, by the way, you speak a beautiful English. You speak a beautiful, beautiful English. Nobody would know you're not a native speaker. So I know how hard you worked at that. English is a very difficult language, Elsie.
It was, and I'm proud of it. I'm a U.S. citizen today. It was the proudest day of my life. I'll try to talk about without crying, but this is beautiful, and I don't think liberals and I don't think a lot of our politicians understand that this is a blessed land.
That's right. It is a blessed land. It has been the land of opportunity for countless tens of hundreds of millions of people who have come here and made a life for themselves and for their children, and they were willing to wait for the next generation if they couldn't have it themselves. Unfortunately, a lot of that has changed, and we have demagogues in office for quite a while now who have promised people the entire ball of wax, the great enchilada, the minute they get off the boat. And that's what changed things. They didn't say, you have to wait, your children will have it. They said, I'll give it all to you right now, even if I have to take it from the pigs who earned it themselves. That's what's going on, Elise. So are you the girl from Ipanema? Where are you from in Brazil?
São Paulo. So, actually,
we're going to play it. Wait, we're going to play a tune for you. Play the tune for the girl from Ipanema.
Young and lovely, the girl from Ipanema goes walking.
Where is Ipanema, Elise? Where is Ipanema?
Rio de Janeiro.
Is Rio as beautiful as people say, or is it kind of a hellish place once you leave the beach?
It's both. Once you leave the tourist places, it's hell. And it's what everybody here doesn't understand. You don't have the same freedoms and economics, all that stuff. I mean, people lead hard, hard lives. And we don't know how good we have it here until you go to these places.
No, you don't. They don't understand that these people... I'll tell you what, you stay on the line. Stay on the line. We're going to get your address. We're sending you a free copy 2 weeks from now of Trickle Up Poverty. You're one of the few to get it. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. I've said a lot of things today. I realize I may have offended some of your sensibilities. I didn't do so intentionally, nor do I apologize for my opinions. I still live in a free country. I still live in a free country. That is correct. And now I'll take your calls, because that is also correct. 1-800-449-8255. I don't even have a question for you. John in New York, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Dr. Savage, I just want to thank you, take a moment to thank you for what you do. You're the only guy who tells it like it is. You're the only guy who can go from politics to religion to how to make sauce. And when you tell us a story, it's like we're there. When you talk about Brooklyn or the Bronx or the Roman Empire, all I got to do is close my eyes and you take me there. God bless you.
That's very nice. That's right. It's called the common touch. If you can walk with kings and never lose the common touch, then you will be a man, my son. I've walked with kings, actually one king, the king of Tonga, King Tupou, the old king of Tonga. It's the only king I ever met. I think it's the only king I ever wanted to meet. But I don't think I really want to meet. Are there any kings left? There's a prince. Don't get me started on Big Ears McGraw over there in England. There's a guy who couldn't work in a Starbucks. I think he'd spill the coffee on himself and claim unemployment. If Prince Charles ever was forced, let's say, to give up the throne and go to work, what could he do? What is he suited for? But that's a separate story. That's no meaning. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Big news today. Fear of tax vote. It's on MichaelSavage.com. Los Angeles temperature hit a record high of 113. Where's Al Gore now that we need him? Nancy Pelosi's pantsuit vies with that of Barbara Boxer and Hillary Clinton for the most terrifying, nightmare-inducing outfits ever created for a woman.
The pantsuit revolution.
It's frightening. It's incomprehensible. They look like monsters with gavels. China imposes a tariff on chicken. Did you hear this one? Significant cheating by FBI agents on an exam. How do you like that? And 10,000 TSA employees have gotten secret clearances. 10,000 of America's dumbest now have secret, top secret clearances. Can you believe this? Obama at a new low in a political poll. New low. Only 38% say he deserves to be reelected. Everyone's on to him, but what good is it? What good is all of this unless you look at the inside story? And the inside story is where the story is always told. Transgender student denied homecoming king crown. You hear what this country's become to? Australia faces the worst plague of locusts in 75 years, and here in America we're facing the worst plague of liberal locusts in 1,000 years.
Biblical times.
Biblical. A biblical plague of left-wing locusts here in the Savage Nation. We'll keep talking about this and other topics on the show today, but let's stop for a minute. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. There are some other stories of Beowulf that are really worth talking about. Actually, the funniest thing is President Bill Clinton trying a vegetarian diet. You hear this? That'd be like Bill Clinton trying celibacy. Here's President Bill Clinton saying he's trying a vegetarian diet to stay healthy. Listen.
Have you looked that far down the road to grandchildren and the blessings of grandchildren in your life?
Yeah, I'm trying to stay healthy enough to have them. That's what I want to do.
Well, you look quite fit. How are you? And as I understand it, Chelsea asked you to slim down a little bit before you walked her down the aisle. But with your travel to Haiti, with CGI coming up, with being on the campaign trail, have you been able to manage to keep those eating habits healthy?
My travel schedule is cut back on my exercise some, which is frustrating to me, but I follow a pretty strict diet, and I try to limit how much I eat and what I eat, and it's lost
20 pounds mm-hmm. or so.
Vegan mm-hmm. or vegetarian?
No, wait, listen to the listen to the rest of this puff piece garbage from Yahoo. May as well be the government press. Yahoo and the Huffington Post may as well be the government press. Listen to the next puff piece to Clinton.
Vegan or vegetarian or?
Yeah, pretty much. Once in a while I'll eat fish, but not often. Because wow. I'm trying to be Ooh. One of those experimenters. Since 1986, mm-hmm. several hundred people who have tried essentially a plant-based diet, not ingesting any cholesterol from any source, have seen their bodies start to heal themselves.
Oh, please. I wrote the book on this in 1972. Please, Mr. Clinton, we may not agree politically, but trust me, I know more about this than the idiot who's advising you, and there's a lot less to it than meets the eye, so don't knock yourself out. I'm not telling you to go back to cheeseburgers and Monica Lewinsky types. And when I was talking about submitted files, I was not discussing Bill Clinton. I want to be clear about that. I mean, yes, there is a malady primarily suffered by Anglo-Nordic males who are fixated on biblical Semitic type like Monica Lewinsky. I was not referring to Bill Clinton. I admit that. But the fact is, stop with the vegan or vegetarian, because whether or not you want to accept it, Mr. Clinton, I wrote the book on nutrition when many of these people didn't even know what the word was, and they don't know what the hell they're talking about. Let me give you an example. Since I'm going to get into this, and I'll do it in about 2 minutes or less, Mr. Clinton and all the others listening. This stuff was promoted back in the 70s, that if you went on a diet with no cholesterol and primarily plants, you could reverse the arterial occlusion and you could be a new man. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't give up the cholesterol-laden foods, but cholesterol isn't the issue. It's the saturated fat that's the issue, number one, and whether or not the saturated fat that you're taking in is oxidizing inside your arteries and causing the occlusion. And that is prevented by taking large enough doses of vitamin C, vitamin A, and other antioxidants, which is something that these quacks should know about after 30 years, but they still don't admit the value of supernutrients. But let me go to the next step, Mr. Clinton and others listening to me. You're experimenting with these vegan diets as though it's something brand new. This was promoted by a health food quack in Sausalito in the 1970s. It was also heavily promoted by the Pritikin diet. The fact of the matter is, let me show you a study. Let me introduce you to another study that they don't want you to know about. I'll never forget it. As I was working for my PhD in human nutrition at the great University of California at Berkeley, which I earned in 1978, by the way, in less than 3 years, probably a world record. I don't think anybody else ever earned a PhD in a shorter time from such a great university. I learned the following. There was a study done out of India on 17,000 railway workers. Now, the reason I mention the number, Mr. Clinton, is because you have to have a large enough sample to draw a conclusion that has any validity whatsoever. You can't prove very much with a small population that's being studied. 10 people, 15 people means very little. 17,000 railway workers is a big sample. Why does it matter whether they were railway workers? Because they were largely involved in the same job category somewhere, handlers, baggage handlers, somewhere, ticket takers, whatever. But by and large, they were in the same profession, so they were subjected in the overall scheme of things to the same stresses from the job. They divided the group up into two groups. One half of the group were vegetarian, and the other half was not vegetarian. And take a guess what they discovered. The vegetarian group had a much higher rate of heart attacks than the non-vegetarian group. Now, this is something that's not known, but I'm an expert in the field, Mr. Clinton. I'm not saying go back to your cheeseburgers. Go and eat the fish, for God's sakes. Eat a low-fat diet. Take high doses of vitamin C and vitamin E. I guarantee you'll live a lot longer than going pure vegetarian, which is liable to kill you altogether, God forbid. And I'm telling you that for a reason. They have to ask, well, why would the vegetarians in India have had higher rates of heart attack, higher incidence of heart attack, to use a specific term, than the non-vegetarians? Remember, the non-vegetarians in India were eating things like ghee, which is clarified butter. You understand that? I mean, they were eating high-fat diets, and they had lower incidence of heart attacks than the vegetarians. The answer is quite simple, and I'll tell it to you at another time. Here I am experimenting with the radio show. I mean, I have a tried-and-true show, third largest in the country. And yet I'm experimenting, because unless you experiment and try to make something fresh, it becomes stale. That's all I can tell you. And I listen to enough radio from time to time to tell you it's quite boring. I know many of you want to hear this about Obama and that and this and that. There's only so much I can do of that until I become totally bored of it. And I I don't want to do it today, so I'm doing this. I'm doing this because I think it's important. Yes, I'll do the news. Yes, I will touch on it. In fact, I'm going to wager a bet on the Savage Nation right now that I will bet you, as restless as some of you may be, you're looking to get out of the classroom right now and go up to an amusement park and get out of class. But I would venture a guess that many of you, if I were to pick up the yellow pages of my local phone book and start to read under dentists or doctors or restaurants, with an occasional aside equipped to an aside, let's say, on each reading, if it strikes me, you'd sit and listen to a whole segment of me reading the yellow pages. Now, there's a couple of reasons for that. One, you love my voice. B, you love my personality. C, you're used to me. D, I'm part of your mental geography, and you can't do without me. You have, in other words, a fixation on my voice and my show. So if I decide to read the yellow pages, and I may do that, try that as well. I may break new ground on the Savage Nation and prove that I can read from a phone book, and you'll listen. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return. Savage.